Okay, I want you to close your eyes for a second and just picture a city. We're in Noida, Sector 75 to be exact. Now, if you know anything about that area, you know exactly what that image looks like.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
It's the definition of a concrete jungle. High-rise apartments as far as the eye can see, the constant hum of traffic, metro lines buzzing right overhead.
Right.
It's a city that is practically synonymous with, rapid development and technology.
It's the future happening right now. And in an environment like that, you expect the schools to be racing towards that same future. You imagine like tablets in every hand, coding classes for toddlers.
Yeah, tiny little backpacks weighed down with textbooks.
Exactly. It's that standard race to the top mentality.
That is the default setting for modern education, isn't it? Especially in a tech hub. The assumption is usually more
Right.
technology, an earlier start, faster progress.
Right. But today, we're unpacking something that stands right in the middle of all that hustle and bustle and just says, stop. We are doing a deep dive into the NEB school in Noida. And the reason this stood out to me from the stack of documents you sent over is just the sheer contradiction of it all.
It really is a striking contrast to everything happening around it.
They call themselves a sanctuary. And get this, their core philosophy is defined not by what they offer, but by what they've banned. Their tagline is, bookless, bagless, and screenless.
It feels almost rebellious, doesn't it? Like they're intentionally positioning themselves against the entire weight of the traditional education system.
Wait.
Yeah, and I use that word weight very deliberately.
How so?
Well, looking at their philosophy documents and the founder's notes we have here, they talk a lot about trading the weight of traditional schooling for the lightness of play-led exploration. It's a deliberate pivot. They're moving away from that that pressure cooker model, the rote memorization, the heavy bags, the academic burden, toward what they describe as a sacred window of discovery.
Sacred window, that is. That's some heavy terminology for a preschool. I mean,
No.
usually when we read school brochures, we hear about developmental milestones or school readiness.
Academic excellence.
Right. Sacred implies something spiritual or at least something that needs to be protected at all costs.
And that is the key to understanding their entire mission. Our sources for this deep dive, which, include their curriculum overview, admissions literature, all that, make it clear they aren't just trying to teach kids the alphabet in a different way.
Okay.
They're trying to preserve a specific phase of childhood. They view early childhood as a sacred dawn that shouldn't be rushed or cluttered with, adult expectations.
It's interesting because if you take away the books, the bags, and the screens, which are basically the three pillars of a typical school day, you create this massive vacuum, and a room full of 3-year-olds with nothing to do sounds like chaos. So what are they replacing all that stuff with?
It certainly would be chaos if they didn't have a plan. But they haven't just removed things. They've replaced the traditional academic tools with an environment. They call the campus itself the third teacher.
I've heard that term before, I think, in Reggio Emilia schools. The idea is that the walls, the floor, the outdoors, they teach you as much as the person standing at the front of the room.
Precisely. And at NEB, they've taken that literally. The campus is designed as Noida's largest natural preschool sanctuary. So we're talking about open environments, sensory-rich play areas, a design meant to connect children to the rhythms of the earth.
So the argument is that a child learns about gravity not by reading a definition, but by.
By dropping things.
Yeah.
They learn about biology not by looking at a diagram, but by getting their hands in the dirt.
So it's experiential wonder versus rote memorization.
Exactly. It's a difference between knowing the word for leaf and knowing what a leaf feels like when it crumbles in your hand.
But here's where I play the skeptic, or at least the nervous parent. We need to be careful not to mistake play for just randomness.
Sure. You might look at their brochure, see kids running in the grass, and think, okay, that's fun, but are they learning or are they just burning energy?
That is the most common concern with this type of pedagogy. But looking at the curriculum documents, it's actually highly structured. It's just that the structure isn't math, science, English. The structure is the five elements.
Okay, let's unpack this. Earth, water, fire, air,
Yeah.
space.
And this isn't just a Captain Planet metaphor or some vague spiritual idea. This is the actual curriculum framework.
The actual framework.
Right. It's rooted in what they call the Indic knowledge system. And interestingly, they claim it's fully aligned with the National Education Policy, or NEP 2020. This framework dictates the physical spaces and the specific activities the children do every day.
Okay, so let's break this down element by element, because this is where the rubber meets the road. How do you teach a toddler using Earth?
So Earth represents stability and growth. In a traditional school, stability might mean learning to sit still at a desk with your hands folded.
Right.
At NEEB, they focus on grounding. Grounding in the electrical sense, or the psychological sense.
Both, metaphorically. The activities involve gardening, digging, connecting to life's foundations. It's about physical stability, balance, coordination on uneven ground, but also the psychological stability of knowing where your food comes from.
Which is actually huge. I mean, how many kids today think carrots just come from a plastic bag in the supermarket?
Exactly. It's about slowing the child down to the rhythm of the ground beneath them. In a city of high-rises where kids might go days without touching actual soil, this earth element is about reconnecting them to the physical reality of the planet.
That makes a lot of sense. It's an antidote to the concrete. What about water?
Water represents flow and emotions. This is one I found particularly fascinating. The curriculum uses reflective water play to help children understand adaptability.
Adaptability. How does splashing in water teach adaptability?
Well, think about the nature of water, right? It changes shape to fit its container. It flows around obstacles. It can be calm or it can be stormy. They use water play to teach emotional regulation.
Yeah.
Just as water changes, so do our feelings. It gives toddlers a physical language to understand their own internal storms.
That's actually quite sophisticated. Instead of just saying, stop crying, you're giving them a physical element that mirrors their internal state. You're feeling stormy right now, like the water?
Exactly. It validates the emotion while teaching them that, like water, the emotion will flow and change. And then you have fire.
Now, as a parent, seeing fire and preschool in the same sentence makes me extremely nervous. Please tell me they are not giving the three-year-olds matches.
No, no matches, no open flames. Fire represents energy and confidence. It's about the internal spark. They have these spaces called sunlit discovery labs.
So it's about channeling energy.
Yes. Right. It's about self-discovery, inner drive, and the confidence to say, I can do this. Think of it as the opposite of passive screen time.
Right.
Screen time tends to dampen that internal fire you're consuming, not creating. This curriculum is designed to ignite that spark through active challenge and discovery. It's the fire of curiosity.
Okay, so fire is the drive. What is air?
Air is movement and expression. This is about physical freedom and communication. They have these things called outdoor air trails.
Which I assume are for running.
Running, climbing, exploring. But they link it specifically to communication. Just as air carries sound, this element focuses on how children express themselves to others while moving through nature.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it's social interaction, but not sitting in a circle. It's interaction in motion, you know, negotiating who goes up the slide first, inventing games on the fly. That's air.
And finally, space, the final frontier.
Or the internal frontier. Space represents imagination and calm.
Calm. In a preschool, that feels like the hardest metric to hit. I've been in a room with five preschoolers. Calm is not the word that comes to mind.
It is the most ambitious part of the framework. They've created Skyview Imagination Corners and these high-ceiling sanctuaries. These are specific spots on campus designed for quiet reflection.
So they're actually teaching boredom, or rather, the ability to be alone with your thoughts.
They are teaching the habit of silence. They want to expand the child's imagination by giving them the literal and metaphorical space to think without constant input or stimulation. In a world of constant notifications and noise, the ability to just sit in space is a superpower.
You know, when you map it out like that, earth for grounding, water for emotion, fire for confidence, air for social expression, and space for imagination, it feels incredibly intentional.
It is.
It's not just go play.
No, it's a holistic developmental map. And as I mentioned, they claim it aligns perfectly with the NEP 2020's push for experiential learning. They're just using this ancient terminology to five elements to deliver very modern developmental science.
So we have the philosophy and we have the framework, but I want to know what this looks like on a random Tuesday morning. Because philosophy is great on paper, but getting a three-year-old to school is a logistical reality. What's the daily rhythm?
Well, first off, they don't call it a schedule. They call it the rhythms of life.
Of course they do. Schedule is probably too heavy a word for them.
Right. But it does flow differently than a typical school day. It starts with what they call the soft arrival.
The soft arrival. That sounds infinitely better than the frantic drop-off most parents are used to. You know, the crying, the clinging to the leg.
The parent rushing to get to work.
Yeah.
They've tried to engineer that panic out of the system.
Yeah.
The transition happens in the earth atrium.
Ah, back to the earth element.
Exactly. It involves sensory grounding activities immediately upon entering.
So you don't just walk into a classroom and sit at a table, you engage your senses first.
Right. Warm greetings, tactile materials to touch. It helps the child center themselves before the day begins. It physically signals, you are here, you are safe. Then they move to nature's classroom.
The air element.
Kicking in. They head to the trails for outdoor exploration.
Burning off that morning energy immediately. That's smart.
Exactly. Then they move to sensory atelier. This is hands-on work in the water and fire zones. Creative spark, emotional flow stuff. But the part that really caught my eye is what happens next.
What's that?
The fourth stage is silent space.
Wait, a scheduled period of silence for toddlers?
Yes, a quiet interlude focused on internal reflection.
I have to be honest, getting a group of four-year-olds to be silent for internal reflection sounds like a magic trick or a miracle.
It sounds impossible, doesn't it? But it speaks to that space element we talked about. They're trying to build the muscle of silence from a very young age.
Mm.
I mean, most kids today are overstimulated from the moment they wake up until they crash at night. This is a deliberate pause in the rhythm.
If they can actually pull that off, that is a massive life skill. Being able to sit quietly with yourself is something most adults I know can't do.
So true. And finally, they end with a community circle. Storytelling, sharing reflections. It wraps up the day with social connection before they go home.
Now, here's the inevitable question. How do they track all this? If there are no books, no worksheets, no tests, do you get a report card? Does it say A plus in silence or B minus in earth?
No report cards. They use an observation-led model. Instead of testing, the assessment is described as a continuous story of growth.
A story of growth. I like that.
The teachers are looking for milestones in things like emotional flow, curiosity, grounding, social interaction. They're documenting the development of the person, not the retention of facts.
It requires a lot of trust from the parents, though. You have to trust that playing is learning.
Totally.
Which leads me to the people behind this, who came up with this vision. Because it takes a certain kind of confidence to tell Indian parents, who are often very academic focused, no books, trust us.
And this is where the credibility piece is so crucial. If this were just some random person, it might be a hard sell. But the founders are IIT Delhi alumni.
IIT Delhi. Okay, that changes the narrative immediately. These are engineers, people who conquered the toughest academic system in the country.
Exactly. They have over 15 years of experience in education and social impact. The sources mention they have trained over 1 lakh youth. That's 100,000 people across India. They've worked with state and central governments on health and nutrition.
So these aren't people who just decided to open a play school on a whim. They've seen the education system at a macro level.
And I think their background is significant. They are products of that high-pressure, rank-driven system. They know exactly what it takes to get into IIT.
And they seem to have looked at the end product and the stress that comes with it and decided to engineer a completely different start.
It's the recovering overachiever model. They want to create heart-led leaders, as they put it, rather than just academic robots.
Right.
That's the stated goal. Nurturing, ethical, confident explorers. They are betting that if you build a foundation right with nature, resilience, curiosity, the academics will follow naturally later on. They aren't anti-academic, they're pro-foundation.
Now, speaking of the parents, this school isn't just asking for trust. It seems to be asking for a lifestyle change. You can't just drop your kid off and hope for the best.
No, the parent ecosystem is a massive part of the NEEB model. In fact, there is one feature here that I think is absolute genius. It might be the stickiest part of their whole value proposition for a city like Noida.
What is it?
They have a feature called Co-work at School.
Wait, seriously?
Yes, they have an exclusive on-campus cafe and co-working space. Parents can work there while their children are learning.
That is brilliant.
Right.
I mean, think about the logistics of a working parent in Noida. You drop the kid off, you rush through traffic to a Starbucks or drive 45 minutes to the office.
And then you have to rush back for pickup. This eliminates all of that friction.
It keeps the parents, as they say, close to the campus rhythms. But it also creates a psychological comfort. You're there, but you aren't hovering in the classroom.
Exactly. You're integrated into the school environment. Mm. It changes the school from just a service provider,
yeah,
somewhere you dump your kid, to a community hub.
Absolutely.
And the admissions process reinforces that idea of community. It's not just filling out a form and paying a fee.
What do you have to do?
Well, step one is a discovery call. Standard enough. But step two is called parents' education.
The parents have to go to school.
In a way, parents are expected to read specific literature to understand the journey. They have to do their homework. They need to understand why there are no books before they can enroll their child.
That's a smart filter. It weeds out the parents who just want a daycare and attracts the ones who are actually bought into the philosophy.
Correct. And step three is an interaction with the founder. It's described as a freewheeling conversation to check for synergy.
So they're checking if the family aligns with the vision.
That's right. It sounds less like enrolling in a school and more like joining a club or a tribe. They also have nature discovery days and collaborative dialogue sessions. They are building a community of like-minded families.
Okay, so let's get down to the brass tacks. We've talked philosophy, curriculum, community. But if I'm a parent in Noida and I'm sold on this sanctuary, what's the damage? What are the logistics?
So let's look at age groups first. They have a toddler program for 1 to 2 year olds. But the source notes that admissions are currently closed for that group for the 2026-27 year.
Okay, so demand is high. That's a good sign for them.
Seems so. The main entry points are pre-nursery for 2 to 3 years, nursery for 3 to 4, and then kindergarten 1 and 2, which takes them up to age 6.
And the investment. Because sanctuary, premium environment, and exclusive co-working usually means expensive.
It is on the premium end. For the academic year 2026-27, they have two main options. The half-day program, which is 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., is INR 25,000 per month.
25,000. And if you need the full day?
The full day, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., is INR 45,000 per month.
45,000 a month. That is definitely a significant investment for a preschool.
It is. But we have to look at the value stack. They clarify that this is all-inclusive. It covers tuition, nutritious meals, stationery, and consumables.
So no hidden costs.
Right. They explicitly mention no surprise bills for art supplies or annual day costumes. And if you factor in the meals and potentially the savings on a separate co-working membership for the parent, the math starts to look a bit different.
Right. If that 45K allows a parent to work effectively from the campus without renting an office, the value proposition shifts from just childcare to lifestyle support.
Exactly. The session begins in April, like most Indian schools. But given the parent education and interview steps, the process likely starts months in advance.
So putting it all together, we have a school in the heart of a tech city that has banished screens. A curriculum based on earth, water, fire, air, and space.
A campus that acts as a teacher. And a community of IIT alumni, founders, and co-working parents. It's a fascinating experiment in redefining what premium education means.
How so?
You know, for the last 20 years, premium meant more. More facilities, more tech, more subjects.
More stuff. We thought adding things added value.
And the NEE school is arguing that premium now means less. Less noise, less weight, less artificiality.
That's a really powerful way to look at it, trading clutter for clarity.
It connects back to that idea of the sacred beginning. They are betting that if you protect that early childhood window from the rat race, you actually produce better, stronger, more creative leaders in the long run.
It reminds me of that saying, slow down to speed up.
Precisely. By slowing down the inputs, no flashing screens, no heavy bags, they hope to speed up the internal development of the child.
So here's the thought I want to leave our listeners with. We live in a world that is increasingly driven by AI, by algorithms, by screens. We are all glued to them. We are rushing toward the metaverse.
We are. There's no escaping it.
But is it possible that the ultimate luxury and perhaps the ultimate competitive advantage for the next generation is actually a childhood that is completely disconnected from all of that?
That is the big question. Mm-hmm. In an artificial world, reality might just be the most premium product of all.
Something to think about. That's it for this deep dive into the NEB school. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.